This is Icon Art Radio. I'm Bill Teeple. I'm here with my co-host, Alan Cobb. And our guest today is Joni McGinnis, a local artist who's in our art auction, one of the artists in our art auction that's on this month. And we had you on about 4 years ago, I think. Is that right? Something like
2009, that. I think.
Yeah. And this is 2012, maybe three or 4 years ago.
Yes.
All right. Well, you've gone through some interesting transformation, and that's why I wanted to bring you on the show again, because I'd like to hear a little bit about how you, as an artistic person, went through these changes and how they came about and sort of what I have a feeling that I had some effect on you.
Yes, you did.
Let's put it that way. Joni made wonderful floral watercolors that were really very popular in town. Everybody loved her things, and she sold these to lots of people. And I know one person that bought about 20 of them for their corporate collection. And you know, this, you had a career and a reputation and all of this, but then you started to go through some changes. So talk a little bit about that, where it all led.
Excuse my voice because I do have a cold. And ironically, I had a cold 3 years ago when I did this talk show, and that's the last time I had a cold. But anyway.
So it's obviously just an excuse.
It's an excuse.
When you're on the radio.
Yeah.
Your voice sounds just fine.
Thank you. So I think I was tired of doing the florals and landscapes and the watercolor. And so I reached out to you as a teacher and asked you if you could help me go another direction, explore. And I think you took me back to kindergarten and allowed me to just, the first time I did abstract painting was at Gallery 51 East, up at that studio. And one day you said, rather than to draw something and then paint it, why don't you just play? Just play, just do 20 or 30 little watercolors and don't think about it too much. Just put forms on and colors and have fun. So I did, and some of them
came. And the idea was not referencing anything in nature, representation, just play with form and color.
Exactly. So I did that and came up with probably 10 or 15 that we liked. And so I matted them and we put them up in the studio for one of the art walks. And I actually had somebody that offered to buy one. And I thought, wow, okay. Because I, you know, wasn't sure how people would react to me doing abstract work since they were used to the other. And then I sort of forgot about that for a while and then started exploring with oils. And several years went by. And then one day, or 1 month, I can't remember how it happened, but both you, Ananda and I, Ananda Kessler, both began to do kind of the same vein. You said, we were both feeling kind of stuck. You said, why don't you just play? Just put color down on the canvas and just see what happens. So we both started to explore abstract painting. And we've both been doing that ever since. That was probably...
Well, I might say that you've become quite successful at
it, too.
When we had the commercial gallery on the corner, you were the best-selling artist there. And we're talking about selling small abstract paintings for $1,000, $1,200, $1,500. So that's having kind of made it, if you ask me.
It was kind of a remarkable thing. You helped me find my niche or what I love doing so much that I didn't mind painting every day and producing lots and lots of paintings, which when you do that regularly, they get better and better. So you asked me to be in the Iowa Invitational, which to me was a great honor. I always had a goal of someday having a painting in Icon, but you're not sure that you would ever be worthy of that status. And so when you invited me to be in it, it was like a great boon to my confidence. And then you had the Three Women Abstract Painters, which was the abstract expression group here in the mezzanine of Icon. And that was also wonderful. And then those things both happened in 2010, 2011. And then later in 2011, I was a featured artist at Teeple Hansen Gallery and sold several paintings then. And seemingly, it seems like every show that I had at Teeple Hansen or every painting that was in Teeple Hansen, at least one of them sold. So it was successful.
But what I've observed is that you seem to like find yourself. You seem to like come into the thing you'd been looking for all your life in art.
Mm-hmm.
And you've been on a high with it ever since. It seems to nourish you and continue to nourish you.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing this, playing, it's just the music, I call this the music of visual form and color.
Yeah,
that it's more like music than it is any kind of like representational visual art.
That's what I like about abstract art is I'm not confined to having to make a tree look like a tree or a flower look like a flower. And there's just endless possibilities. And so that really excites me because I know I'll never get bored with it. And so every day I get up and I'll have some inspiration. Maybe it's from nature, maybe it's some clouds, maybe it's the color of the sunrise. And I want to go in and I want to paint. And then I just begin putting shapes and colors on the canvas.
Well, it really is infinite. And we keep discovering that because you'll sort of do. And I always encourage you to do a series, to take an idea and then investigate that idea and kind of go deep with it. But what we find is that other ideas come up and other things, we see other things that inspire us in terms of color and form. Or you just run in. What I know about this kind of art is that in the process of doing a series, you'll run into some new experience with the paint in doing a series, and then you'll want to take off and explore that territory, and this can go on and on and on. So we actually move in sort of we're taking each thing and going deep and kind of in a vertical direction, experiencing the most subtlest thing we can do with it. At the same time, we're kind of exploring on the horizontal and finding new territory to explore and take deeper. This is modernism. They divide up, the whole of art history into different segments. And actually, we're not in what's called the modern period anymore. We're in the postmodern period. And what you're describing and what I grew up with and what is so dear to me is kind of the art for art's sake movement, where the painting has to do with what's going on visually as visual music inside the rectangle of the canvas with where it's its own reason, and you're enjoying what's happening there, and its value is in the same kind of value you get out of listening to a symphony or music. It has no practical purpose. It's not building, that symphony isn't building a house for you or watering the lawn. It is a symphony, and its purpose is that transformation of the soul. And I feel the same way about abstract art.
It's absolutely nourishing to my soul. And it's so fulfilling that I don't know what I would do without it. So I really thank you for introducing that medium and that, finding that in me. I might not have ever gone that direction thinking, because actually abstract art is really pretty difficult to pull off.
Absolutely. I find that realistic artists that are just sort of sold out to that often will say, oh, anybody can do abstract. It's just like throwing some colors and forms and like that. It's really hard to do realism. That takes getting the perspective right and the forms right and the shapes and everything perfect. But then when they try it, they find out how hard it is. It's actually really, in a way, more difficult because it's like composing from nothing, something that has unity and balance and all of that.
And that's what I love about it, because I feel like I'm an actual creator, not just copying nature.
It's So it's more like creating, composing music as opposed to playing the notes written
exactly.
by somebody else.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So that's very fulfilling.
But you were a musician. I mean, that came up just as we're talking here.
Mm-hmm.
And did that, are you ever drawn to do music again? Or is that behind you now and it's visual art now?
Not really. I only went into music to get out of a class. In fifth grade, I really didn't like my teacher. So when the music teacher came around and said, is anybody interested in joining the orchestra, you can every day get out of class for 2 hours, I signed up. And my grandfather had a violin that my great uncle used to play. So they gave it to me, and I had no other background in music. I never played the piano, couldn't sing, didn't think I could do it. But I actually liked it.
Well, you were quite talented.
I got good at it.
You win awards and all that's in music.
I think it's just because of the time spent. Anything that you do for 10 or 12 years, usually you're going to get good at it. And I love listening to music, and I really like classical music. So, you know, it was fun, and it was part of my whole cultural rounding me out, so to speak. But I knew at some point, maybe when I was in high school, that that I really wanted to pursue visual arts. That really appealed to me much more than music. So
but
I started that.
You had one of those teacher situations, right? That I hear so many bad, terrible stories of, where the teacher is more discouraging than encouraging to a student.
Yeah.
You had a teacher that told you shouldn't pursue it.
Well,
obvious that you're talented, so.
I had a lot of good teachers, but this particular one was a watercolor teacher. And as you know, watercolor is difficult because it can get out of control really quickly, and you can't really paint over a mistake. And so you really have to plan it out well and execute it well for it to be worth looking at. So I was struggling with that, but I really liked the medium because it was so beautiful and clear, and you could create bold, wonderful colors. And so I went to her one day and I said, what do you think? And she took one look at it and said, I think you should stick with your violin. And I was kind of crushed by that because I didn't really want to stick with my violin. I was getting ready to quit that and wanted to pursue art. And I really took what she said to heart, and for many years thought I didn't have any talent in that area.
Well, we run into that sometimes in art, that where the my philosophy is that everybody has an artist inside them, and that the teacher just has to pull that out and reveal that and allow the person to just go with it. I've heard so many stories like this where someone comes to me as an adult and says they just quit when they were young because they felt like they weren't talented and couldn't do it because of some school experience.
Right. Well, I actually have to credit my husband for encouraging me to get back into it. He knew when we first got married and first met that I really wanted to pursue art. And so at some point, we were living out in California. He said to me, you know, you should take some classes at the community college or something. There's probably a lot of great artists out here in the Bay Area. And so I did. I took a class at Berkeley with this watercolor professor. I mean, he was an art professor, but he specialized in watercolor, and kind of got my juices flowing. And then when I came back to Fairfield, we moved back, I found more teachers that taught watercolor. Terrence Kennedy and some other people, even a lady from Ottumwa who had some nice work. So anyway, I just started taking as many workshops as I could to sort of learn the craft. But I don't think it wasn't until I started taking classes with you, Bill, that I really started to grow leaps and bounds. And that's because you didn't teach me your technique, which is drawing, or you used to do watercolor, but you just let me do what I did and sort of guided me, which empowered me, you know.
I like to teach the fundamentals of which we can build our creations, mm-hmm. and then show all the kinds of creations that have been done by all the great artists over time, and then to see what seems to be the spark inside that person that's their voice and the thing that they have to say, and I encourage all of that. It's good to go to a specialist. I'm sort of like a cheerleader and a general practitioner, but sometimes it's good to go to a specialist that does the very style of thing that you want to do. And then you can learn how he does it so that you can apply it. But that's not, I send people out to the
If Hans Hoffman was around, I'd go. But I,
right, I will send you
or
to
Rothko.
Vasily Kandinsky.
Yes.
Let me just say, for those who just tuned in, if they're in the car or something, just turned on the dial, that this is Icon Art Radio, and we're interviewing Joni McGinnis, one of the local artists that's quite successful with her abstract painting on KRUU 100.1 FM. The interesting, as Alan is sitting here listening, do you have
any
comments?
He's very quiet today, which is unusual for
you
Alan.
You can just continue to listen and we'll talk.
That's fine with me. I'm enjoying it. I tend to listen when I'm on the radio unless I have something to say.
Okay.
Well, at other times, that's smart. I'll speak even when I don't have something to say.
Do you have any questions for me, Alan?
Well, you know, the thing that always, I'm always curious about in abstract art forms, and, you know, my music stuff up until very recently has been extremely abstract. Although when you think about it, even traditional music, unless it's a song about something, is intrinsically abstract. But I'm always interested in your approach to a new project. I find if I want to write some music, I have no idea what I'm going to do, but I have a vague idea of what I want. And so then I start approaching the instruments and thinking, gosh, I don't know where to start. I haven't a clue. But because I know what I want, I start fiddling around and I listen to what I'm doing and I say, okay, that's in the right direction. Let's pursue that. Excuse me. But with painting and other media, it's kind of tricky to do it that way because you don't want to like put a nice bold brushstroke across the canvas and then say, nope, that's not the direction I'm going in. Stretch another one, please, Jeeves. You know, there's money and time and effort and inconvenience involved in getting off to a false start. So there must be some amount of inhibition.
You know, that is the number one question that everyone asks me is what, how do you know or get started or know what you're going to do? I think a lot of that happens behind the scenes. Every day when I go out in the world, I will find myself having these thought processes of, I'll be looking at the leaves and the way the contrast of the, you know, yellow-orange leaves against that dark brown trunk. And I'm visualizing that in a painting, but I'm not really thinking, you know, oh, I'm going to put this stroke here and that stroke there, but I'm composing it in my head. And I'll have all kinds of paintings in my head from those inspirations. And it could even be like rocks, shapes of rocks, actual different neat shapes that I like the way they went together. And then I just store it in my brain or heart or something. And then when I do sit down to a canvas, I have no idea what I'm going to do at all. So I say to myself, well, let's just start with a color. So I'll put a color out on the palette. And I enjoy just looking at that color. And I will do exactly what you just said. I will just put a stroke of that beautiful magenta on there. And I'll look at it for a little bit. And then I'll think of a color that I think I want to go with it. And then it is like a puzzle, and I will begin to compose and construct and change and paint over and scratch out and wipe off and add on until it starts to have unity. And so I really have no idea when I sit down what I'm going to do, or when I get up, I don't even know how I created it, because that wasn't the plan. But I think a lot of the planning does happen. It's just on the subconscious.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have to admit, I'm doing a lot of that too. I hear something and I think, oh, that just, you know, a phrase in a symphony or a car horn or something, and I'll think, ah, that's relevant.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why it's relevant, but in the end, it's relevant because it's going to turn up in something that I do. And I'm going to just find a place for it because I liked it.
Exactly. So a lot of those color harmonies is what I want to see again. If I see them and like one time we were taking a trip and through the Midwest, about 8 hours, and it was a cloudy gray day. And I looked over and the grass was a yellow green and there were these black cows. And then the sky was gray, and it was some combination of the citrusy green with the dark black cows and then the gray sky. And I said, oh, I want that again. I want to see that again somehow, somewhere. Wouldn't necessarily be cows, but those colors.
Right.
And so I did. I painted a painting with those colors because I wanted to see it again. It was so striking to me. Yeah.
But it is interesting, I think, that first stroke is kind of the seed.
Yeah.
You know, you've got sort of a, like the tree has its pattern. Mm-hmm. We know that we're going to get an oak tree here eventually, and they all look different because of the way it unfolds. So you put that first stroke, and then that's the seed out of which the painting grows, even though there's a general pattern that you feel inside. It's pretty interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what's exciting about it, is the fact that I don't know what I'm going to do, because I'm not a big planner. I've always been very spontaneous. And I did not like that part about watercolor, was everyone would say, oh, you have to plan it all out well ahead of time. And I refused to do that, which made a lot of my paintings, you know, a failure. But some of them were very spontaneous and beautiful because I did not plan it.
Now, one thing I'm noticing as your teacher and as the person you work with, your work, month after month, contains more. And I know, I mean, you must be watching this happen to yourself, because and this is true of everyone, the first sort of abstract paintings or any kind of paintings they do tend to be a little bit one-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
And as we become more familiar with all of the elements that we have to work with and more experiences, as you've been describing, and then understanding all the complexity of formal relationships that can happen inside that rectangle, they get richer and richer and more fulfilling. It's like one melody or one pattern in music, but you start layering those patterns with counterpoint and secondary themes and all of this, and the music gets more and more interesting, as long as it doesn't become chaos and get out of hand, or they all relate together. And your paintings are becoming more and more that way. So your paintings are yielding more and more rich experience for me. And that's one of the great things that we all find as we go deeper with this whole thing.
They definitely have a lot more depth and push and pull. And I even had someone who saw my show down at the vault that's down there now, the Ohm store, say, I can see Joni behind some of these things, meaning that I can see like the resemblance of some of your old paintings, but you have new depth on top, so I can see through. So there's just a new dimension to it. Like you said, and I don't know, it's just evolving.
One of the cool things that I find about you is that you're this artistic person, that musical talent, artistic talent, and you're a lover of beauty and form, but you're also the chief operating officer of a large corporation.
Mm-hmm.
So this balance of heart and mind and intellect and all of these things is unique to, well, it's something that everyone would like to have balanced in their lives, but I see it in your life, and I highly respect that you can do all of these things.
Yeah, thank you. I think the art balances that, definitely balances that, and makes me a better leader, because I have that outlet and that whole other side of the brain to develop, and it's my secret world.
Well, and also I think you, I'll just ask you, does in your business life and your that whole thing, that corporate world, and in the art world, my experience is that you have to have a balance of both things. To pull off the business thing, you have to have a balance of heart and mind, mm-hmm. and in art, you have to have a balance of structure and dynamism and poetry and those things. So, it's interesting to look at one as a business as a painting, and a painting as something that's structured mm-hmm. well, like a business. Mm-hmm.
It allows me to not get so attached. If my work was my life, and that's all I cared about, and if that wasn't successful, you know, I would be devastated. That would be too bad. What I think helps me be successful at that job is that I have this other thing that I feel so fulfilled in, and it has been successful. So I always know in my mind I can be an artist, and that's my true calling and what I really passion for. So it actually allows me to be unattached to the other and do better at it.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming in. We've been talking to Fairfield artist Joni McGinnis. This is Icon Art Radio, signing off.
Listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.